It's Friday, the 4th of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, Kosovo heads to the polls, the nation's fifth elections since 2008. We'll look at what to expect. Plus, tensions in Baghdad as violent protests put the city into lockdown.
I've never seen Baghdad under curfew during the day. This is a city that's literally a ghost town right now.
Also ahead, New York trials car-free days on some streets, and a sneak peek at The Row, a new luxury retailer setting up shop in the British capital. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Kosovo will head to the polls this weekend to contest the nation's fifth parliamentary elections since it declared independence in 2008. The country's political transition has hit a few roadblocks along the way. Kosovo is yet to complete a full four-year parliamentary term, and incumbent Prime Minister Ramuš Haradinaj faces questions in The Hague over his role in historic war crimes. Monocle's Guy Delaunay sent this report.
Political leaders normally pay for making life more expensive for their country's people, but acting Prime Minister Ramuš Haradinaj has made the tariff policy he masterminded a feature of his campaign. 100% Kosovo is the slogan of his AAK party, and the policy has played well with voters who feel it's the best bet for pressuring Serbia into recognising Kosovo. Mr. Haradinaj told me that he's committed to maintaining tariffs despite international objections.
The way out of where we are, it's a comprehensive agreement on recognition between Serbia and Kosovo that would resolve not only the dispute on the latest decision of Kosovo's government, the tariffs, but every other dispute between two nations that we are neighbors. Yes, we are ready to stand for ourselves forever. We have no choice, no alternative.
And that's despite any pressure from Washington or Brussels or the individual member states?
We respect this pressure. We welcome it. However, where is the solution? It's possible to crush Kosovo. It's a small nation. But is that the solution? No.
In June, Kosovo and its allies marked the 20th anniversary of the arrival of NATO peacekeepers.
20 years later, I think you have done a fine job of winning the peace.
But Bill Clinton wasn't the only blast from the past over the summer. In July, a war crimes court in The Hague summoned Ramuš Haradinaj. Prosecutors wanted to question him over his role as a commander of the Kosovo Liberation Army in the late 1990s. That triggered his resignation as prime minister and Sunday's election. In other places, a prime minister suspected of war crimes would face a ballot box wipeout. But in Kosovo, it's different. James Kerr Lindsay is a Balkans specialist at the London School of Economics.
The fact that he has been called before the tribunal is something that to many Kosovo citizens, Kosovo Albanians, is seen as a deep injustice. The big thing for them is that this is seen as somehow calling into question Kosovo's right to exist.
But plenty of people are fed up with these former national heroes. They've failed to bring the prosperity they promised when Kosovo unilaterally declared independence from Serbia 11 years ago.
They feel deeply aggrieved at the way that Kosovo society has evolved. They're very unhappy with the political situation. They believe that corruption is rampant and rife, that this needs to be tackled. And they don't feel that the existing political parties and political constellation has been dealing with it.
The election could be a chance for a reset on tariffs and relations with Brussels and Belgrade, or it could produce a government committed to continuing an attritional grind. The post-election coalition negotiations will be more vital than ever in setting Kosovo's direction of travel. For Monocle, in Pristina, I'm Guy Delaunay.
Many of Iraq's biggest cities are on lockdown following 3 days of furious protests. A government-imposed curfew has failed to curb the violence. At least 20 people have been killed, with hundreds more injured. Imran Khan is Al Jazeera's correspondent in Baghdad. He spoke to Monocle's Andrew Muller.
Imran, first of all, Baghdad, for those who don't know it, is one of your great, big, bustling, crowded, noisy Middle Eastern metropolises. What's it like right now?
There's nobody out on the streets right now. The curfew was put into place around 5 a.m. local time after there were clashes leading to Tahrir Square, which has been the focal point for the protesters. What happened on Wednesday was they threw a ring of armour around Tahrir Square. The security forces, with a massive security presence, helicopters flying in the air, to try and stop people coming to the square. All throughout the night, there were clashes in neighborhood areas and in streets, running battles were going on. And so the government announced this curfew, and I'd never seen Baghdad under curfew during the day. I've been here when at night, where it's been completely empty, but this is a city that's literally a ghost town right now.
How long do you think that's likely to hold? Because the other thing about Baghdad is that it is absolutely huge, both in terms of its population and its geographical sprawl. Can the city's security forces actually keep that under control indefinitely?
Well, the governor said that the curfew will last until further notice. But what's happening right now is that protesters are gathering in squares nearby to Tahrir Square. So there's clearly people out in the streets in central Baghdad. There's also a call that's gone out via social media to get people out on the streets to push towards Tahrir Square. So you've got to understand, these are young people that are protesting. These aren't people that belong to any political party, any religious party. And it's also a leaderless movement. This is just ordinary people who got out on the streets because they were angry and frustrated at the lack of jobs and opportunities and what they say is a corrupt government. So when you've got no leaders, when you've got no nobody to talk to negotiate with, it's very difficult to stop people coming out on the streets. And yes, like you say, they can secure the city by throwing a whole ring of armor around it. They can put all the police, all the state security out onto the streets. But if people want to come out from their local neighborhoods and gather in large number, how are you going to stop that?
To New York now, where a trial is underway that could help bring some calm to the city's urban gridlock.
New York City barred most car travel on Manhattan's 14th Street yesterday as part of an 18-month pilot project designed to speed buses along the busy thoroughfare. While unhappy residents' associations have delayed the plan for months, they have reason to be optimistic. In 2017, Toronto restricted cars on the bustling King Street to prioritize public streetcars. The result? Streetcars were quicker, more reliable, and carried 25% more riders every hour. Torontonians, like New Yorkers, feared that barring traffic from one major street would simply lead to gridlock on those surrounding it, but the evidence says otherwise. Instead, a thoroughfare with reliable bus service and safer cycling encourages residents to abandon their cars altogether.
And finally, Monocle's editorial team slips out for a spot of shopping at a bold new luxury retailer that's just set up shop here in London.
For years, there's been talk about whether the US can produce a luxury conglomerate to rival French powerhouses LVMH and Kering. There are some pretenders, but to generalise, US groups have struggled to compete because brands there don't have a long history of craftsmanship a la Louis Vuitton. Luxury shoppers tend to like their purchases with a side serving of heritage. Despite this, two individual US labels, The Row and Gabriella Hearst, have managed to carve out a lucrative slice of the luxury pie. Both are young, relative to their competitors. The Row was founded in 2006, Gabriella Hearst in 2015. Yet what they lack in heritage, they make up for in one hugely attractive selling point: quietness. Both create elegant designs that eschew logos and are made from the most sumptuous fabrics. Both avoid pushy marketing. The Row, founded by Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen, is almost anti-publicity. The sisters rarely do interviews, and rather than featuring clothes, their Instagram is mostly a mood board of architecture and artworks. As a result, they've cultivated an air of mystique, a rare thing today when most brands have lost the allure that comes with some mystery. Now, both brands have come to London to conquer the European market. Gabriella Hearst opened a shop in Mayfair last month. Yesterday, The Row opened just around the corner on Carlos Place. This American duo are a refreshing tonic against all the social media noise and shouty streetwear that's come to plague fashion. And their success thus far proves that consumers will pay a lot for lovely, low-key clothes. We have a feeling they'll thrive here.
That's all in today's programme. The conversation continues on Monocle 24 tomorrow with the Morning Report, live at 8 a.m. London time. And you can read more about the stories you've heard here today by subscribing to our daily email bulletin. Details are at our website. I'm Ben Ryland. The Monocle Minute returns on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.